activist who won two state decisions. How can somebody win two state decisions and become a criminal? You hide and you intentionally erase evidence. Thank you.
Did you read the next?
1207, request of Sarah Garrett to address council regarding the 2008 Motive Space Symposium project.
Thank you for being here. When you speak, state your name for the record, and you have 3 minutes.
It's Sarah Garrett, and this is Eric Stewart, a local independent AV film production specialist, and I'm the director of the Motive Space Coalition, a young nonprofit organization, a coalition of young architects, designers, developers, and activists who are staging as the first event of our organization, the 2008 Motive Space Symposium and Exhibition this summer, and that's what I'm here to tell you about today. So to give you a little background on the project, I'm nervous. I'm a third-year Master's of Architecture student at the University of Toronto. And I'm from Portland. I've lived in Portland for most of my life, for the last 10 years, and I've worked for architects and developers here in town through that time for different nonprofits as well. And I consider myself a civic leader and an activist, and I'm very committed to continuing my education and thinking very critically about how I want to practice architecture in this town and how I can do it ethically and radically at best, how architecture and design can be used as true tools of empowerment and change. So the Motive Space Symposium, which will be September 20th and 21st here in City Hall, is bringing together architects and developers from all over Portland. Volunteers and organizations are coming together completely grassroots and volunteering their time and their resources to teach citizens, to teach Portland citizens about architecture and development, and specifically to excavate a working model. What we're doing is calling it a working model for collaborative property development. So that's the first thing that we're focusing on this year. We're working on excavating an actual model for how development can be led by citizens, how we can teach citizens to come together to develop housing for themselves, essentially, that's more affordable, more ethical, and more community-oriented than they would be able to build homes independently. So we're involving people from co-housing development and design, from cooperative development and design, and from traditional development and design. Just a lot of amazing leaders are coming together to volunteer and to teach Portland. So it's a really exciting project, and I wanted to invite you all personally to come and to support us in this and to join in the dialogue. A lot of really excited, motivated people are going to help us get this proposal together and to just keep it moving, to really understand what collaborative property development can do and how it can be used as a tool for Portlanders for what I hope is a very long time. So thanks for your time. I think.
Thank you very much.
Good job.
Thank you.
Please read the next.
Item 1208, request of Sharon Nassett to address council regarding a third bridge corridor.
Good morning. For the record, my name is Sharon Nassett. My address is 1113 North Baldwin. Nice seeing you, gentlemen. Happy birthday, Commissioner. I hope somebody with a gorgeous voice comes in and sings to you today. I would give it a try, but I have brought today an easel and also two sets of paper, which Ms. Carla has. As you probably are aware, I've been working on transportation for about 7 years, and I am most interested in transportation that has affected our transportation hub of the economy and the economic part of our trade and transportation, as you know, is on the west side of town, where we still have 1,000 acres that are undeveloped and are buildable and would be the perfect place for more manufacturing jobs. One of the problems with this 1,000 acres is they are, we'll give this a try, right here, whoops, I guess this one, in the west end of town where they are landlocked. Trade and transportation used to be by water and just by rail, and fortunately we do have I-5 next to it. The current Columbia River Crossing Bridge is not enough to take care of the infrastructure and the infrastructure problems that we have. Many people in our community, as Commissioner Fish brought up when the CRC was here, why wasn't a third bridge studied? Well, many people gave you the answer, which they didn't follow the NEPA. But whether they follow the NEPA process or not, we need another bridge, and we have enough people in our community who feel that we need another bridge. Public-private partnership, which was set up over 7 years ago, has the ability to gather these people together, find out if there is enough interest, and do something about providing infrastructure into the area that is the largest employer of our state. This area's deficiencies has cost us a lot. I would like the council to consider the fact that a new bridge next to the Burlington Northern Rail can be built within 18 months to 2 years. We will have 7 years of construction on I-5 when they do go with Columbia River Crossing with no other bridges. We'll be taking down one bridge for another bridge, not adding more safety. This bridge directly connects at Jansen Beach to I-5 with Marine Drive, Columbia Boulevard, and Highway 30. Therefore, it provides direct access back to I-5 in an emergency situation. I'm asking the council to consider consider that I would like to, as an advocate and perhaps as a representative of council, to go out to the differing businesses and communities and find out if people are interested in enough to go forward with building it on their own. We have that ability in this state, and I think the interest is there, and it would behoove us to find out if we do have that much interest. We don't just build one building downtown. We should not be just building one bridge.
Thank you.
Thank you. Happy birthday.
Is that it for communications?
That's all.
Is there anybody, any commissioner who wishes to pull any item from the consent agenda? Is there any person in this audience who wishes to pull any particular item from this consent agenda? Please call the vote.
Adams?
Aye.
Fish?
Aye.
Leonard?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Potter?
Aye. Please read the 9:30 time certain.
Item 1209, appoint 30 members to the Public Involvement Advisory Council for 2- and 3-year terms.
The Public Advisory Council was established by City Council in February to strengthen and institutionalize the city's commitment to public involvement and assist city bureaus in creating consistent expectations and processes for public involvement activities. In Portland, we strive to set national and international standards for excellence in public involvement. We have had a great number of successes in the past, but to ensure success in the future and improve where progress is needed, we must continually push ourselves. Two of the Bureau innovation projects I initiated when I took office, numbers 8 and 9, recommended creation of a standing committee to advise City Council and City Bureaus on best practices, maintaining our successes, and improving our shortcomings. Today, the Office of Neighborhood Involvement staff returns for approval of the Public Involvement Committee membership. This is an excellent group of city staff and community members who will work collaboratively to Portland's betterment. They'll come to council twice a year with written and oral reports. I want to thank and congratulate ONI's Afifa Ahmed Shafi for an excellent recruitment and selection process. I'd also like to thank our city bureaus for engaging around these important issues. Finally, I'd like to extend particular gratitude to those community members who have committed to volunteer their valuable time for this committee. Now I'd like to bring forward ONI's Afifa Ahmed Shafi, Laurel Buttman, and Polo Catalani to the podium.
Thank you very much, Mayor Potter, and thank you, commissioners. My name is Afifa Ahmed Shafi. I'm a staff person in the Office of Neighborhood Involvement. I'm coordinating the activities of the Public Involvement Advisory Council, or PIAC for short. Very, very pleased to be with you here today and to bring forward 29 new members to serve on the City of Portland's Public Involvement Advisory Council, many of which are here today with yellow name tags, which I will introduce shortly. To start, I'd like to share with you a quote from Matt Leininger, who we recently brought to Portland. Matt is someone who works in cities across the United States and observed a trend. He said, "The relationship between community and government is undergoing a dramatic shift. More than ever before, community members are educated, skeptical, and capable of bringing the decision-making process to a sudden halt. Public officials and other leaders are tired of confrontation and desperate for resources. In order to address persistent challenges, communities have been forced to find new ways for people and public servants to work together. Today, I'd like to present to you the PIAC as one of these new ways that our city of Portland has created for public servants and community members to work together. This very impressive group of 29 people includes 16 community members from a broad diversity of backgrounds, as well as 13 city staff, each from different city bureaus. And before I continue, I'd like to just read their names and ask them to either stand or wave so that they can be recognized. Stephanie Blackman from Portland State University, Glenn Bridger, Southwest Neighborhoods, Jimmy Brown, Water Bureau. Next to me is Laurel Buttman, Office of Management and Finance. Megan Callahan couldn't be here. She's with the Bureau of Environmental Services. Also to my side is Renault Polo Catalani with the Immigrant and Refugee Community of Oregon. Jen Clodius joins us from Portland Fire and Rescue. Cassie Cohen comes to us from Vision into Action with the City of Portland. Mikhail Shabazz joins us from the Bureau of Development Services and will be serving in partnership with Elisa Corps. Tony DeFalcos is joining us. He's from the Center for Diversity in the Environment and Young Environmental Professionals of Color. Brad Dennis joins us from Native American Youth and Families. Christine Egan couldn't be here. She's with Jean Lawson and Associates. Brian Hoop with the Office of Neighborhood Involvement. Jolene Jensen-Klassen couldn't join us. She's with the Portland Development Commission. Colleen Keyes, she's with the Portland Parks and Recreation. Jill Kolick couldn't join us. She's with the Office of Sustainable Development. Paul Leisner, he's active with Southeast Uplift. Lyndon Nedekoven, also an active with Southeast Uplift. Art Pierce, Portland Department of Transportation. Felicia Phillips, Start Making a Reader Today. Midge Purcell from the Urban League of Portland. Mandy Putney from Enviro Issues. Helen Russin couldn't be here, but she's with the Bureau of Labor and Industries and is serving as a liaison to the Portland Citizens Disability Advisory Committee. Arianne Sperry, she's with the Planning Bureau. Brian Steelman couldn't be here. He's from the Historic Mississippi Business Association. Sunny Tan couldn't join us. He's with the Cambodian Community of Oregon. Damon Isaiah Turner also couldn't join us. He's with the Metropolitan Family Service. And Arnold Warren is here. He's from the Portland Police Bureau. And Christine White couldn't join us. She's from the Port of Portland Community Affairs. So thank you for letting me read that long list. We're very excited about both the diversity of people represented from community members as well as city bureaus. Just to give you a short recap about this group. We consciously worked to create a group that would be approximately half city staff and half community members to move toward our goal of working together as partners. Since public involvement is a two-way street, it is most effective when both partners are open, willing, and actively engaged in the process, which we feel is reflected in this group. We have two major goals for the work of the PIAAC. The first is that there will be increased support and guidance for city bureaus to conduct successful public involvement processes. This discussion has already started to happen via the Citywide Public Involvement Network. That's an informal monthly brown bag series which I coordinate. Over 40 city staff are regularly attending and sharing and discussing best practices for engaging the community, learning new techniques. City staff from that group have already remarked how excited they are about this list of people and are excited to hear what this group will be bringing forward. The PIAAC will build upon the work of city public involvement staff as we develop guidelines to support city staff in their work. The second goal we seek to achieve through the PIAAC's work is the inclusion of more voices. By working to create even more accessible public involvement processes and to further reduce barriers to involvement, we seek to increase the community's impact on public decision-making and make it a meaningful and effective process for them to do so. As we all know, quality public engagement at the front end leads to greater community ownership and satisfaction over resulting decisions. In terms of our role, the PIAAC has two major roles. The first is to create quality public involvement guidelines for the City of Portland. And the second is to support and guide the implementation of those guidelines. As you know, this is a standing body for the City of Portland, so we're excited to stick around to support and guide implementation as well as creating recommendations. In terms of the recommendations we'll be looking at, we're starting with the wealth of recommendations that already exist from past efforts from Community Connect, Bureau Innovation Project 9, and many other groups. The PIAAC will consider each of these recommendations and test them and then seek to move them forward to implementation. The unique makeup of the PIAAC allows that each city bureau can internally vet these recommendations and ensure that it works for them, as well as the community members who can ensure that these recommendations are relevant and effective and meaningful for their communities, thus ensuring that our final product is strengthened by multiple perspectives. So now, to turning again to the group of members we are bringing forward to you today, over the summer we conducted an extensive selection process. City bureau directors were asked to identify and send forward key people in their bureaus that could participate on the PIAAC and could also guide future implementation of recommendations. In the community, we conducted a broad outreach campaign to build awareness of the new advisory council and invite people to apply. We received over 30 applications for the 16 community member spots. Members were chosen for their demonstrated commitment and experience with engaging a broad diversity of the community. We celebrate both the size and diversity of this group. We know it'll be a challenge, but we also believe that the broad array of perspectives represented will lead to better solutions. We celebrate that numerous members in this group also have the interest in bridging to other important groups in our community, such as the Small Business Advisory Council, the Disability Advisory Council, and others. We are still holding three positions open, one for Elders in Action and two youth positions. We're actively working with these organizations to recruit, and we want to do that so we can continue to ensure that we're being inclusive of the broadest diversity of our community. With such a large and diverse group, we seek to pilot and embody innovative techniques within our own projects for the purpose of modeling inclusive engagement methods. I look forward to connecting the work of the PIAAC as a new resource for the City of Portland to other existing initiatives and resources that are coordinated citywide and out of the Office of Neighborhood Involvement. In closing, I applaud your support of the initiatives for building coordination and consistency across city bureaus, as well as opening the door for more Portlanders to be engaged with their government. And now I'd like to hand it over to Polo Catalani and then Laurel Buttman, two of our members that we seek to appoint today.
Good morning and thank you. Salam, Mr. Mayor, Commission members. My name is Ronald Atang Sayang Catalani. I'm a community lawyer and journalist, and since February of this year, I've been at Immigrant. I know the name of this organization, I really do. Immigrant and Refugee Communities of Oregon. I stumbled because I helped start this organization a couple of decades ago and had a different name, same acronym back then, and I'm now old and I cannot recall new things. So at IRCO, I'm kind of a cleanup guy and janitor. And the reason I'm telling you this is because in these last 6 months in working with ERCO, I've been in your chambers 6 times. And I'll tell you, over the last 26 years, I have not been here at all. So things are changing. And I may not be the first person to note that for you, but I think that change is really very good news. About this recruitment process that my sister just went through, you know, I thought I was applying for a job or for a Match.com date or something. That was the most intense process for someone wanting to give my time for free I've ever been through. I thought it was a job, career move. But let me say this. Many really, really smart people can talk about good governance that will be a product of this. And really smart people can talk about cost savings. My job in the 90 seconds left to me is talking about increasing access to government and that more voices is more better. I'm sure I was gone from town for 5 or 6 years, but I understand Mr. Mayor has opened a conversation with communities variously called Vision into Action or Portland Plan or, see, I don't even know what these things are. I have to look at my notes. Community Connect. And all those things have started a very interesting conversation. The part of the conversation I can tell you about is noting that our mutual assistance associations in Portland and your very vigorous neighborhood associations in Portland have been doing a left-hand and right-handed bit of work forever and ignoring each other as if we didn't live in the same neighborhoods. Now we're discussing bringing the neighborhood association efforts and our mutual assistance association efforts into the same sort of energetic insurgency at City Hall. So in the next few years, I'm looking forward to getting our folks some more of those wonderful city jobs and maybe getting a bigger bite of those city contracts and, of course, crowding your advisory commissions and especially budget committees. Thank you so much for inviting me in. Boy, are we going to have fun. Thank you to your staff.
Good morning, Mayor and Commissioners. Laurel Buttman, Office of Management and Finance. I'm excited to be here today. I have to tell you, this is like deja vu all over again. I remember back to the mid-1990s, sitting as a neighborhood activist with city staff and writing the first public involvement handbook and the principles of public involvement that were since adopted by the council. We have been through this process numerous times. What's different today is your commitment to it. And that's very exciting because when we formalize these processes, then we know we have the support. I think it was Toni Morrison who said, what you don't know, you don't understand. What you don't understand, you don't value. And what you don't value, you don't protect. And I think our history of civic engagement in the city of Portland is something that we all want to protect. It's strong. And times are changing, and we have new work to do. And so I'm very excited that we're here today to do this. I see two very exciting things coming out of this now that I'm on the bureaucratic side of it, though you haven't taken the activists out of me yet. We have the opportunity to be responsive to the challenges of navigating the public involvement process across city bureaus. City bureaus do it differently. There are reasons for that. That's okay. But the more consistent we can make it and the more understandable we can make it, the more it will be valued and understood and known, and people will bring the best to the table. The other piece of this is collaboration and coordination across city bureaus. The Citywide Public Involvement Network is up and running. We did this many years ago. It worked very well. Our opportunities to share our experiences, to learn from each other. You've got an enormous wealth of knowledge across the bureaus, and when we get together in one room, that just is exponentially bigger. So that's very exciting. With that, I don't have much more to say other than thank you for your support. We look forward to getting to work, and we're all glad to be here today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Questions from the commissioners? This is a vote to approve the advisory council. Please call the vote.
Adams?
Well, I want to thank each of you for your willingness to serve. I like the fact that it includes both city staff and community advocates, and we have lots of work to do. So Thanks for your willingness to serve. Aye.
Fish.
Aye.
Leonard?
I know a number of you, so I know that the product you're going to produce is going to be really good, so I'm looking forward to it. Thank you. Aye.
Saltzman.
So we don't get a line item vote on this, huh? Anyway, I welcome all of you, and I think it's going to be a great group, and I know you'll get some good youth members, too, and somebody from Elders in Action, but I look forward to constructive engagement with the Public Involvement Advisory Council as we continue to make city government open and transparent. So, aye.
Potter.
I want to thank all of you as well on the council. I think that what you do is some of the most important work that our city has, and that is making sure that that the actions of the city are aligned with the interest of the community. And so I appreciate the time that you're going to commit to this, to the thoughtful ideas that you will submit, and also the ability to work within the city bureaus, to work with them to create more welcoming arms, more welcoming ideas. And I think it's going to be good for our community, and I think it's going to be good for our people. So thank you very much. I vote aye. Please read the 10 a.m. time certain.
Item 1210, accept staff report and recommendation and order of council for Thomas Hermock, Measure 49 claim.
Chris.
Good morning. My name is Chris Dirth. I'm the city's Measure 49 program manager, and I'm here to present for you a Measure 49 claim brought by Thomas Hermack. As you know, the city is obligated to review all of the approved Measure 37 claims that you approved over the last couple of years before Measure 49 was enacted. This is a Measure 37 claim that you approved at a hearing June 21st of last year. Just to remind you of that claim, it's located in Southwest Portland in the Arnold Creek neighborhood. This is the property outlined in blue there, owned by Mr. Hermack. The property to the west of it with the red dot is also owned by Mr. Hermack, but it's not subject of this claim. It's located on Southwest Arnold near the corner of Southwest Boone's Ferry Road. Just to give you an idea of the topography of the property, this is a LIDAR map showing the steepest slopes in purple over 30%. So you can see that most of the subject property is very steep coming up from Southwest Arnold Street. Just to summarize the Measure 37 claim, it was brought by Thomas Hermack. The address is at 10910 Southwest Boone's Ferry Road, submitted in April of 2005. And the regulations he challenged at that time were the change in the comprehensive plan map designation to R20 from R10. This was done in the Southwest Community Plan. Your order at the time granted Mr. Hermack's claim for his Measure 37 waiver. And the council order was to not apply the new R20 comp plan map designation and to allow the R10 to be in place as it was when he purchased the property. This would have allowed him to request a zone change in compliance with that. He did not proceed with that during the approximately year that he had before the passage of Measure 49, and therefore he's coming forward with this Measure 49 claim right now. To remind you, Measure 49 requires us to review all of the approved Measure 37 claims. We sent Mr. Hermack, as was required by the measure, a letter on March 5th of this year. He submitted his completed and full application for a Measure 49 claim on June 19th within the 90-day deadline. So once again, our analysis of Measure 49 requires us to look at 12 different factors to see whether this claim meets each one of those under Section 9, Sub 5. And I'll run through these very quickly with you. It requires that the claimant is an owner. He is indeed. All owners consent to the claim. They have in this case. The property is within the UGB. It is. The dwellings were allowed at the time of acquisition. And in this case, it's buildable lots that are we're talking about here. And we're interpreting those to be dwellings for the sake of this claim. Also, it requires that the property is zoned for residential use, and it is, and that one or more land use regulations prohibit established single-family dwellings. And in this case, we determined that the comp plan designation change would have prevented one or more additional lots and additional single-family dwellings if he wanted to move forward with those. The Measure 49 requires that the challenge regulation is not exempt, and in this case it is not. The challenge regulation was enacted after the property was brought into the UGB, and it was. I refers to metro regulations, and it does not apply to us. J requires that the challenge regulation was adopted after the property was annexed, and that is the case. The challenge regulation reduced the fair market value of the property according to an appraisal as required, and I'll speak in a moment about the appraisal submitted by Mr. Hermack. And then finally, Section 9, Sub 8 requires that he show us that the highest and best use of the property must have been residential at the time of acquisition, and he has done that. So just to go into a little bit of an explanation about the appraisal, because that was the piece of this claim that gave us the most difficulty. We spent many hours toiling over the language of Measure 49, trying to understand how it might apply to this claim. And we had our appraisers, PGBP evaluation, review the appraisal, and they did find that it did meet the statutory requirements of Section 9, Sub 7 of Measure 49. They found that there was a slight discrepancy of 1 month in the dates used for that appraisal, but we consider that difference to be immaterial. PGP also found that the Hermack appraisal conducted by Mr. Larrabee the values in that appraisal were supportable and defensible. So we agreed with the values presented in that appraisal. And then both reviewers, Mr. Hermack's and ours, agreed that Mr. Hermack is due the equivalent of $156,000 in development rights in compensation for his Measure 49 claim. And as you recall, under Measure 49, we cannot compensate him in money. We can only compensate in development rights equivalent to the assumed loss. And that the assumed loss in this case is $156,689. Where the two appraisers disagreed was that Mr. Larrabee estimated that Mr. Hermack was due two additional development lots to compensate for his loss. PGP used a slightly different methodology in calculating that, and they estimated one additional lot was due. And this is what we spent hours and hours toiling over, looking at very carefully the methodology used by both appraisers. And in the end, we determined that reasonable people could disagree on the interpretation of the statute in this case and how it should be applied to these two different appraisal methodologies. And so without making a judgment as to which one might be correct, we determined that both of them, using different assumptions, might very well be correct. So since the appraisal language is not clear regarding this kind of claim, we conclude that each compensation calculation could be considered correct using different assumptions. And without passing judgment on that, we conclude that Mr. Hermack could be due two additional lots, the same as he was granted under his Measure 37 claim. And therefore, my recommendation to you would be to approve his Measure 49 claim and compensate him for his estimated Measure 49 loss by not applying the R20 comp plan designation and restoring the R10 designation that was in place when he purchased the property. This is the same as the order you granted under Measure 37, and this would allow him then to pursue a zone change if he so chooses. And then we also recommend that the order, as you did in Measure 37, ensure compliance with all other city laws in terms of environmental protection, street safety, health and fire safety, and things like that. And your previous order ensured that. We recommend that you ensure that once again. Be happy to answer any questions if you have any.
Chris, I have a question. I apologize for my voice. I think I lost it. If we accept your recommendation, what kind of precedent are we setting with respect to this issue of the ambiguous language and how we would address future claims that had appraisals that could not be reconciled?
Well, I'm not sure that we're setting a precedent either way, because I'm purposefully saying I'm not making a judgment as to which methodology might be correct, Mr. Hermack's appraisers or ours. Like I said, Catherine Beaumont and I and our appraiser spent hours examining the language of the statute and looking at both methodologies. And we, in the end, determined that we couldn't make a judgment as to which might be correct. They both might be correct, if depending on the assumptions you make. So we are purposefully trying not to make a precedent as to which methodology is correct in this case.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Other questions? Thank you, Chris.
Thank you.
Is there anyone signed up to testify on this matter?
We have one person, Scott Eckert.
Good morning.
Good morning. Please state your name for the record, and you have 3 minutes, sir.
All right. My name is Scott Eckert. And the purpose for my being here is to share some thoughts I had about this. I am an adjacent landowner to the Hermicks, and as an adjacent landowner, there are some moves that can be made, some development that can be made that can actually affect adjacent landowners as well. So a few of these concerns I had, just for the record, the property is at the junction of Arnold Creek and Lower Boones Ferry, and Boones Ferry Road. It's an extremely busy intersection, and that's a concern of mine. I live just in front of, on the other side of Arnold Creek, on Palatine Street. And so there's kind of a health and safety issue there, increased traffic coming down Boones Ferry and when this development occurs, of course. What will be the increase, the density of use coming out of that little corner where Arnold Creek and Boones Ferry come together? Additionally, the area is very fragile. Not too long ago, one of the adjacent lots to the Hermicks had a slide and, in fact, brought down a house. I don't know any more details than that, but it is rather fragile. And you can see that as you drive along Arnold Creek. So I would ask that you all really be diligent about providing some oversight into development of this property. I certainly concur with the recommendations, but I would just hope as a landowner in the area that, you know, you look into things like the slide, how good access can be created that's not to the detriment of adjacent landowners or, in fact, the public. You know, you keep in mind the steepness of the slope, as has been shared. That's the purpose for my being here. Just, again, concurring with the judgment, but hoping that you all will be diligent about looking at the development of this land when it occurs. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mayor, we have one more person, Jim Zupanik.
Mr. Mayor and Commissioners, Jim Zupancic, good morning. And I have with me Mr. Thomas Hermock, who's the applicant in this particular case. This is one of those nice situations in which we can say that we would ask for concurrence with the staff report, and we very much appreciate the work that your staff has gone through with us to be able to clarify what is sometimes an ambiguous part of Measure 49. We think this puts Mr. Hermock back in the position that he should have been, and we think that the staff recommendation is correct. I want to give assurances to the council that certainly all of the health and safety regulations are going to be met, the environmental concerns, any kind of geotechnical issues with respect to slopes will be dealt with during the course of the land use process, and that will just be done in due course as it would be in any kind of a land use application. So I'll just ask Mr. Hermock to introduce himself.
I'm Tom Hermack. Thank you very much for your time. I won't take up much of it. I simply ask that you accept the staff's recommendations, and thank you again for your time.
Thank you, folks. Is that it?
That's all who signed up.
Okay. Please call the vote.
I think we have to have a motion.
You're correct.
I move to adopt the staff recommendation.
Second.
Please call the vote.
Adams?
Aye.
Fish?
Aye.
Leonard?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Potter?
Aye. Move to the regular agenda. Please read item 1233.
Authorize an intergovernmental agreement with the Portland Public Schools and Tri-County Metropolitan Transportation District of Oregon to establish a pilot program to offer fareless public transportation for students at two Portland schools with the intention to measure results and expand the program as appropriate.
I'm really pleased to bring this item to council today, and in partnership with Commissioner Adams, who's done a lot of work on it as well. This is an intergovernmental agreement between TriMet, Portland Public Schools, and the City of Portland for a pilot program to create a fareless transportation system for our city's youth. Our intentions are to monitor and evaluate the initial pilot program and expand it to additional schools in the Portland Public School District by this January. And by the start of the school 2009 school year, our intention is to expand the program to other school districts within the city of Portland. This is an especially exciting program because it was spearheaded by youth themselves. The Multnomah Youth Commission is the city's official youth policy advisory board, and they have identified access to public transportation as one of the key issues in our community. And I learned this on a very personal basis when I spent a week out at Jefferson High School talking with students there. And invariably, lack of public transportation was a significant issue in the high schoolers there being able to get to school and also to other activities that they have associated with school. The Multnomah Youth Commission has done a great job of building support for this program across our community. They've made presentations not only to the City Council, but also to the TriMet Board, Portland Public Schools Board, and the Multnomah County Board of Commissioners. The initial pilot project is primarily being funded by the State of Oregon's Business Energy Tax Credit, BETSI, which has funded a similar program in Lane County for the last 4 years. In June, Council passed a unanimous resolution in support of this program. It's a real pleasure today to bring this intergovernmental agreement to Council in order to formalize our partnership with TriMet and the Portland Public Schools. Nate, did you wish to add anything to this? Okay, very good. Commissioner Adams, did you want to add?
Well, I just want to congratulate you, Mayor Potter, and Nate, and the Youth Commission for your great advocacy and work on this. One of the benefits of this that might not be apparent with just sort of a superficial glance at the project is the fact that with 43% of our eighth graders in Portland Public Schools dropping out before their scheduled graduation date, we know that one way to keep more students in school is to make sure that they're matched up with programs that speaks to their individual passion. And so the ability for high school students to be able to get on transit and have access to the various magnet and focus programs around the city and have that transit provided free of charge, since we don't have bus service, is a key way, a key opportunity to keep more students in school and lower the dropout rate. So this is a very important program for a variety of reasons, least of not which is to allow students to have access to the kind of education that, you know, speaks to their passion and keeps them in school.
Is there anyone signed up to testify on this matter?
We have three people signed up. If you come on up, they're Sydney Melson, Alicia Ducre, and Ryan McBee.
Thanks for being here today. When you speak, if you'd state your name for the record, we'd appreciate it, and you each have 3 minutes.
Good morning, Mayor and members of the council. My name is Sydney Melson. I'm a senior at Jefferson High School. I catch two buses to school every day, and I also catch the bus to get around Portland. All summer, I've been paying for the bus, and what a relief it was to my wallet when I received my free bus pass. I know that I'm certainly not the only student who benefit from this. Now every student in Franklin and Jefferson High School has a bus pass, not just the students who qualify for whatever reason. This ordinance will be very beneficial for students who cannot afford bus passes, do not want to walk in the rain, or students who cannot afford bus fare every day. Maybe one day soon, all the students in the Portland Public School District can benefit from free bus passes. But for now, I, along with my peers whom I speak for, would like to see the contract for the bus passes expanded from January till June, and hopefully one day year-round. Thank you, Mayor, and members of the council for giving me the opportunity to speak today.
Hi, my name is Alicia Ducree, and I'm a junior, and I'm representing Roosevelt High School. And I want to say thanks for this program and giving Jeff and Franklin the and providing Jeff and Franklin with TriMet bus passes. And I'm going to give examples why students at Roosevelt High School need public transportation. Some students at Roosevelt, like some of my friends, they don't live with their parents. They live with their older sisters. And, like, they don't have a car. Like, I know this girl who's going to miss 7 weeks of school, and school is just beginning, because her mom and dad are preachers, and they go out of state all the time. So she's going to have to miss 7 weeks of school. Yeah, 7 weeks of school. And that's, like, a lot. She's going to be behind. And money issues. Freshmen and sophomores, they can't get a job because they're not old enough. You have to have a permit license or something. And, like, they can't afford a bus pass or buy one because it's $24, and that's a lot of money every month. And, like, most of my friends live in low-income neighborhoods, and there's, like, no way that our parents can afford to, like, get gas and bring our brothers and sisters and us to school every day. And some students would love to go to after school programs, but they have no way to get out there. So that's another problem. And I would like to come to a conclusion, but I really want to thank for bringing this program, and I hope you guys will expand it because it's a great program. Thank you.
Thank you. And I have testimony from a young man named Ryan McBee. I'm Nate Wazshaw, Youth Engagement Coordinator in the Office of Mayor Potter. And Ryan McBee is one of the Multnomah Youth Commission leaders who helped spearhead the project. He also is a student at Franklin High School, which is one of the schools that received the passes for the initial project. So this is his testimony. He wishes he could be here. My name is Ryan McBee. I'm a junior at Franklin High School, and I'm also a member of the Multnomah Youth Commission. Last week was school registration at my school. While standing in line, I heard fellow students excitedly talking about the youth pass. Many students were saying how they hardly ever use the bus, but now they would start riding the bus because of the youth pass. Hopefully, this program will create larger ridership for TriMet now and in the future. I am currently not a large transit user myself, but as I am becoming more independent, I know that I will soon become a transit user. I would like to thank all of the council members for supporting the Multnomah Youth Commission and our project to bring about the Youth Pass. And my hope is that it will be expanded to include more youth and that someday this program will be citywide. Thank you, Ryan McBee.
Thank you very much for being here.
Thank you.
Was that all that was signed up to testify?
That's all signed up.
Is there anyone here who wishes to testify to this specific issue? Please call the vote.
Adams?
I'd also like to thank Tremet for the willingness to partner on this important issue. And again, congratulations, Mayor.
Aye.
Fish?
I want to thank Mayor Potter and Commissioner Adams for their leadership on this issue, and also the Multnomah Youth Commission. A few months ago, I was a candidate, and the most rigorous forum that we attended was hosted by the Multnomah Youth Commission. I think there were a total of five panels that put us through the ropes, and I was very proud to win the straw poll. But I was even prouder that there were so many young people who cared about their city to host such a forum and to hold their candidates and elected officials accountable. And after participating in that forum, I can hardly say I'm surprised that now, with the energy that I saw in that room, that you've successfully developed this pilot project. And I think it's just a preview of what we can look forward to. I want to also just acknowledge that the number of low-income students that we have in our community is rising. The number of children on free and reduced lunch are rising, and many of our students don't have access to a car. So this is a very important program in terms of providing equity to folks who don't have cars and are highly motivated students who are going both to their classes and to extracurricular activities. I understand this program will be evaluated in December. I hope it and fully expect that it will be sufficiently successful that we can make the case to expand it to all our high schools and move to year-round, and perhaps the high school student in my home could be a participant in this program as well. So I'm very proud to vote aye.
Leonard.
Well, in addition to all those good reasons, since this discussion has begun at the initiative of Commissioner Adams and Mayor Potter, I thought it to be a smart marketing move. If we can get people that today are taking the bus, who are in many cases too young to drive, I think that actually creates a better familiarity with the system so that when they're able to drive, they choose to take the bus. And when they get a job as an adult, they choose to take the bus. And so I think this is actually, on a variety of levels, a very wise move and one I'm very pleased to support. Aye.
Saltzman.
Well, I want to thank Mayor Potter and Commissioner Adams and TriMet for doing this, but I most of all want to thank the Multnomah County Youth Commission for really spearheading this issue, and the students at Jefferson High School, because I know this was put in the ear of the mayor when he spent a week out there, and it was put in the ear of several of us when we were out there various times during that week. This is a really tangible, solid success for the Youth Commission, and you should be very proud of that. And I, too, want to see this pilot work. It's a very innovative way to take advantage of a business energy tax credit, as Lane County has done, and I hope that will work in this situation, and that we then can expand this to the entire city, students throughout the city. So I'm pleased to support this. Aye.
Potter.
A few years ago, we worked with young people in the city of Portland, and they created a Children and Youth Bill of Rights. Within that Bill of Rights, there was a committee discussion with the young people about how could they get around the city to attend all the different functions that would help them become better students and better people. And this is definitely one of those things. And the Multnomah Youth Commission picked up the baton and ran with it, talked to many different groups, championed it. And today, this is the council's acknowledgement that we wholeheartedly support this, and particularly as it's reviewed in December and next year, moving this up so that all students, high school students, can have access to this bus, because it's, as I said earlier, it's not just during school hours, it's 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. So they will be able to attend sports events, they'll be able to attend different employment opportunities. There's just a lot of good reasons for this, and it's been stated. I think we're also building our future public transportation riders by having these young folks use the system, become comfortable with it, and as adults grow into it, and like everybody that supports public transportation, look at it as one of the things that is unique in many respects about Portland compared to many other cities in Oregon, is the ability to get from here to there on public transportation. So thank you all, and I thank all the young people who made this possible. I vote aye. Thank you again. Please proceed to item 1234.
Pay claim of Gwen Price, personal representative of the estate of James Jahar Perez, Jr.
Good morning, Mayor Potter, members of the City Council. I'm Jim Rice. I'm a deputy city attorney, and I'm handling this matter. The matter that I bring to you today is a lawsuit that was filed stemming from a shooting in March of 2004. The case has been in litigation for over 4 years. It's been handled at the United States District Court, the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, and has come back down to the District Court. There have been two separate mediation sessions. In federal court, you need to engage in alternative dispute resolution and attempt to achieve a settlement. The most recent one, the two sides came together with the assistance of United States Magistrate Coffin down in Eugene, and there was a proposal to enter into a settlement of the matter for $350,000. The money would essentially be split two ways. There would be an attorney's fee and costs paid. In addition to that, money would go over to an annuity company that would provide a monthly sum to the son of Mr. Perez that would take him through his 18th year. And then there would be four annual payments that could be used by him either to go to college or whatever would be appropriate for him. In addition to that, Mr. Perez has an elderly mother. There would be some monthly payments we've made to her as well, again, through an annuity. A lot of work has gone into this matter, including the negotiations. It has the support of the city attorney's office. There are a lot of details in the case, and if anyone has any questions, I would attempt to answer those for you.
Questions from the commissioners? Thank you, Jim.
Thank you very much, Mayor.
Is there anyone signed up to testify on this matter?
No one signed up.
Is there anyone here who wishes to testify to this matter? Please come forward, Dan. Please state your name for the record, and you have 3 minutes.
Good morning, Mayor Potter and commissioners. My name is Dan Handelman. I'm with the group Portland Cop Watch. And we've been very interested in this case of James Jahar Perez and Officer Siri and Officer May Comber since it happened in 2004, less than a year after Kendra James was shot and killed. And we're hoping that the settlement of a payout of money doesn't stop the city from investigating the policies that led to the death or revising the training materials that were shown in the inquest, in which it was pretty apparent that officers are trained to be scared when they come up to a traffic stop. The question of the racial element in this shooting certainly helped foment public unrest around this shooting, and even with the racial profiling committee that I sit on, I'm not so sure that we have still addressed the issue of potential bias-based policing in Portland. And so with the caveat that Mr. Perez's family sounds like they're going to have be compensated nicely for the loss of their loved one, I still believe that we need to look further, harder at our deadly force policies and the training for Portland police officers. And one of the things that I really haven't heard enough about was that Officer May Comber, as I recall, held down the trigger on his taser for 3 entire minutes and melted the weapon. So I'm hoping that at some point there'll be more discussion about the use of tasers in Portland as well. So thank you very much for your time.
Emergency vote. Please call the vote.
Adams?
Aye.
Fish?
Aye.
Leonard.
Aye.
Saltzman.
Aye.
Potter.
Aye. Please read item 1235.